A measure of 12 palms is assigned to the boar, and the stone bullet weighed above 600 pounds. A vacant place before the new palace was chosen for the first experiment. But to prevent the sudden and mischievous effects of astonishment and fear, a proclamation was issued that the cannon would be discharged the ensuing day. The explosion was felt or heard in a circuit of 100 furlongs. The ball, by the force of gunpowder, was driven above a mile, and on the spot where it fell, it buried itself 1 fathom deep in the ground. For the conveyance of this destructive engine, a frame or carriage of 30 wagons was linked together and drawn along by a team of 60 oxen. 200 men on both sides were stationed to poise and support the rolling weight. 250 workmen marched before to smooth away and repair the bridges. And near 2 months were employed in a laborious journey of 150 miles. A lively philosopher derides on this occasion the credulity of the Greeks, and observes, with much reason, that we should always distrust the exaggeration of a vanquished people. He calculates that a ball, even of 200 pounds, would require a charge of 150 pounds of powder, and that the stroke would be feeble and impotent, since not 1/15th part of the mass could be inflamed at the same moment. A stranger as I am to the art of destruction, I can discern that the modern improvements of artillery prefer the number of pieces to the weight of metal, the quickness of the fire to the sound, or even the consequences of a single explosion. And yet I dare not reject the positive and unanimous evidence of contemporary writers. Nor can it seem improbable that the first artists, in their rude and ambitious efforts, should have transgressed the standard of moderation. A Turkish cannon, more enormous than that of Mohammed, still guards the entrance of the Dardanelles, and if the use be inconvenient, it has been found on a late trial that the effect was far from contemptible. A stone bullet of 1,100 pounds weight was once discharged with 330 pounds of powder. At the distance of 600 yards, it shivered into 3 rocky fragments. Traversed the strait, and leaving the waters in a foam, again rose and bounded against the opposite hill. While Mohammed threatened the capital of the East, the Greek emperor implored with fervent prayers the assistance of earth and heaven. But the invisible powers were deaf to his supplications, and Christendom beheld with indifference the fall of Constantinople, while she derived at least some promise of supply from the jealous and temporal policy of the Sultan of Egypt. Some states were too weak, and others too remote. By some the danger was considered as imaginary, by others as inevitable. The Western princes were involved in their endless and domestic quarrels, and the Roman pontiff was exasperated by the falsehood or obstinacy of the Greeks. Instead of employing in their favour the arms and treasures of Italy, Nicholas V had foretold their approaching ruin, and his honour was engaged in the accomplishment of his prophecy. Perhaps he was softened by the last extremity of their distress, but his compassion was tardy, his efforts were faint and unavailing, and Constantinople had fallen before the squadrons of Genoa and Venice could sail from their harbours. Even the princes of the Morea and of the Greek islands affected a cold neutrality. The Genoese colony of Galata negotiated a private treaty, and the Sultan indulged them in the delusive hope that by his clemency they might survive the ruin of the empire. A plebeian crowd and some Byzantine nobles basely withdrew from the danger of their country, and the avarice of the rich denied the emperor and reserved for the Turks the secret treasures which might have raised in their defence whole armies of mercenaries. The indigent and solitary prince prepared, however, to sustain his formidable adversary. But if his courage were equal to the peril, his strength was inadequate to the contest. In the beginning of the spring, the Turkish vanguard swept the towns and villages as far as the gates of Constantinople. Submission was spared and protected. Whatever presumed to resist was exterminated with fire and sword. The Greek places on the Black Sea, Mesembria, Acheleum, and Bizon, surrendered on the first summons. Selimbria alone deserved the honours of a siege and blockade.